say love.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers hanging out with Kevin Dunn and Brad Keltner. It is a Country Music Friday. On the Country Music Friday, my man BK picks out some jams, try to broaden our horizons to the country music genre. I do not know this song. I do not recognize it. Or the voice.
A little Chris Stapleton.
I like Chris Stapleton, though. Mm-hmm. Big fan. Big fan of Chris Stapleton. He's, Chris Stapleton's actually ridiculously talented.
One of the best.
He made it on my music survey, actually.
Surprise?
Surprise.
Under what?
Surprise. Like the artist that most surprised you. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Chris Stapleton.
He's good.
He should be a staple, no pun intended, for anybody's musical taste or musical library. No doubt. All right. I want to get to this story. I want to talk some NFL here. And this comes from Bill Barnwell. Bill Barnwell had a piece that I think was earlier this week. As a matter of fact, he's going both ways. He did a piece about the four NFL teams most likely to improve. And he also did, and the Cowboys, by the way, made that list. But he also did the four teams most likely to decline in 2020. And he's got the other Texas team on this list. I'll start with them. He's got Houston on among his four teams picked to have a decline in 2020. As BK has mentioned, even about the first list about teams who were expected to have a jump in their win total, or expected to improve this year. We don't really know his definition of improve. He doesn't really state a game total. He doesn't really break it down like that, but he does give you a pretty, pretty elaborate reason behind it. And for the Texans, there's a lot of talk about DeAndre Hopkins and that trade and relying on players like Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller and David Johnson, who have a, unfortunately, decorated past of history and injuries.
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest reason. And, of course, there's lack of faith in Bill O'Brien. People just don't know if Bill O'Brien's a good coach or a bad coach. They can't really figure that out. And with him as the GM and the head coach, there is a lot of uncertainty as to whether he can handle two positions of that magnitude with a pro football team. That's a lot of work for one person. Belichick does it, but not a lot of guys can do that.
What about adding an OC? I mean, because I feel like that's going to help out with some of this.
He did, yeah. Tim Kelly, that should. I mean, even Deshaun Watson was asked about his relationship.
Or play caller. They've had an OC.
They do have a play caller. Tim Kelly is the new play caller. And when Deshaun Watson was asked about his relationship with Bill O'Brien, he spoke very complimentary of Bill O'Brien. But one thing he did point out is that last year there were times where he wanted to make adjustments, that he wanted clarity on a situation, clarity on a play, wanted to talk through a play, maybe bounce some things off someone else, another football mind, and he didn't have that because Bill O'Brien, as the head coach and the play caller, was busy tending to other duties at the time. And that stunts the development of a young quarterback. A quarterback comes off the field, it's fresh in his mind. He wants to talk it through. He needs clarity on something. You need somebody there to give him answers. And if he wants to talk to the head man about it, the guy calling the plays, then he should have access to talk to the guy calling the plays about it. And he didn't always have that last year.
Serious question, guys. Over under week 8 of this season, where Bill O'Brien takes over play calling for the Houston Texans. I mean, we've seen it in the past, right? With Brian Gain as the GM, with George Godsey, the offensive coordinator, a couple of years ago. It's just Bill O'Brien doesn't like not having control, not having power. And I don't know if this is a hot seat type of year for Bill O'Brien, but I think he's at the point right now because of the Texans' lack of playoff success, right? It's like, well, is this the guy to take us to the promised land? Right? Are we just going to waste the best quarterback we've ever had in franchise history in Deshaun Watson and only get to the second round every year? Like, is this our peak with Bill O'Brien as our head coach? So I think there's always like that, you know, the McNair family relationship is a little bit different. It almost feels like Bill O'Brien might be indestructible and unfireable at times. But for me, it's like every year is kind of an important year for him. At least it should be an important year for him. And if this offense is sputtering early on in the season and Deshaun Watson isn't progressing the way he's supposed to progress and, you know, Texans are losing games because of that, I wouldn't be surprised at all if at some point Bill O'Brien decides to take over play calling duties. Because if he's going to go down, he's going to be the guy, you know?
Yeah.
He's not letting somebody else dictate the end of his tenure in Houston. It's got to be his way or the highway.
We'll see if he can change on this, Rod, because BK's right. There's evidence that he's going to jump in here and then maybe be behind closed doors, but really let this guy go.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be a mistake for Bill O'Brien if he did that. I think it would. Honestly, the truth is Bill O'Brien, people don't want to believe it. Bill O'Brien actually is a good head coach, but he was, you know, I think he became exhausted because he was overburdened. And I think he just being the GM and the head coach and the play caller last year, I think that took away from his effectiveness as a head coach. I think if he was able to really display some of that responsibility to other people, and includes the play calling, of course, the GM duties. I would love to see the Texans hire a GM at one point. I know they were trying to do that, but it didn't work out. So he took the GM duties away from Brian Gain and gave himself that title. But the truth is, if he was just able to focus on being a head coach, that's it. Not a play caller, not a GM. I think he'd probably end up being a top 10 head coach in the league. No doubt about it in my mind. You look at the last 5 years, only three coaches have won their division in four out of the last 5 years. I think it's Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, and freaking Bill O'Brien. It's hard to do, and he's done that with even Jack quarterbacks at one point. He is a good coach. He's just, I think he's overstretched. He's just got too much on his plate, way too much.
It does help to play in the AFC South a little bit, though, right? I mean, the post-Peyton Manning AFC South, it almost feels like 9 or 10 wins is all you need to win that division. But you're right. I mean, winning divisions with T.J. Yates playing games and Case Keenum playing a lot of games, you got to give Bill O'Brien a little bit of credit for that. Some of the numbers that Bill Barnwell brings up in this article, guys, are at least some reasoning behind him having the Texans as one of the four teams that are likely to take a step back in 2020. How about this? The 2019 Texans became just the fifth team since 1989 to win double-digit games with a negative point differential. The Texans were -8 last year. Now, week 17 against Tennessee, the Texans benched everybody because they were locked into their playoff seed line, and they lost that game by 21. But still, like, they were 10-6 with a barely positive point differential, even without that game. They've basically been outscored by less than a point per game, right? They were -8, so about half a point per game. Teams that had a very similar average in terms of point differential have won an average of 7.5 games since 1989. So Texans weren't dominating their opponents by any stretch, and sometimes that close game luck is hard to replicate year in and year out.
Yeah, they got 2.5 to 3 on that most teams usually wouldn't. And so, yeah, I mean, I can see that, and even some of the other teams they have on here that he has on the list, and you've got 2 13-3 teams. And with the way the NFL is now, you're going to look at a lot of different things, Rod, and now the Packers were +63, so that kind of gets to BK's point. That, I mean, a lot of these records, you're going to look at the point differential and say, okay, that makes a little sense. But there's not much room for error, and the margin is very thin in current-day NFL. And it makes it fun, and it can make teams that aren't good 1 year better next year. But, Rod, you know what I mean? It's those little things that can really make a difference.
Yeah, I that's why this list to me, I think this list is probably the most questionable. The other Barnwell lists about the teams that will be most improved in 2020, I think, were a little bit more legitimate. This list, to me, is I don't respect it as much is because all these quarterbacks he lists for these teams, Houston with Deshaun Watson, Seattle with Russell Wilson, New Orleans, Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay, even though they got their Jordan Love drama going on. You talk about that, the game of inches, that small margin of error. These are the guys that can make up that difference. They are the great equalizers. And you're talking about arguably all of these guys are future Hall of Famers, except for Deshaun Watson, who, you know, I think one day could be in the conversation, but I won't talk about that now. But if you're in a situation where, you know, the game is on the line. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. I mean, Russell Wilson, even though he gets no respect, here's a great Russell Wilson quote. I got to make sure because I found this the other day. Russell Wilson said, here's the quote. He said, I would like my offense to treat every quarter like the fourth quarter. Because because when you look at the fourth quarter, that's when the Seattle Seahawks always unleash Russell Wilson. They're very conservative. They're one of the least pass happiest teams in the NFL for the first three quarters. But in the fourth quarter, they always unleash Russell Wilson. I think they're like the third pass happiest team in the NFL in the fourth quarter. At least they were last year, and that's where they win games. It's money time, and money time is Russell Wilson time, and money time is Drew Brees time, and the same thing with Deshaun. Deshaun Watson, if you look at career records in fourth quarter comeback slash game winning drive opportunities, Deshaun Watson right now wins 60% of his fourth quarter comeback or game winning drive opportunities. That's better than any quarterback in the league right now. So you're arguing nobody's been more clutch since they came into the league than Deshaun Watson. So when the game is close, unfortunately because of bad calls by Bill O'Brien or because of inept play on the offensive line or whatever the reason is, Deshaun Watson, if you keep it close in the fourth quarter, he'll give you a chance to win. Bill O'Brien knows that now, too. The DeAndre Hopkins thing is great. DeAndre Hopkins' loss is unfortunate. It will not affect Deshaun Watson as much as people think. He's just that good. He really is. Like, he is next level. He's just that good.
Yeah,
it'll hurt him, but it won't hurt him. It won't be devastating to him. He'll still, if these guys can stay healthy, he'll still be very prolific.
Yeah, I think a lot of what went into creating this list for Bill Barnwell was just taking a look at history, right? It feels like he's using more recent history in the National Football League just from an overall basis versus taking the quarterbacks into consideration. But you can fall into trouble when you do something like that, because even if the Seahawks are in a bunch of one-possession games again this year, if I got Russell Wilson on my team and somebody else on the other team, I'm going to side with Russell Wilson more often than not. So I think there is a lot of that, like, hey, historically speaking in the NFL, teams that play this many one-possession games or teams that have a negative or barely a positive point differential generally struggle and don't always have that same success year after year. I think he's going with more than that. But yeah, if you're banking on Drew Brees or Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers to all of a sudden take a step back and not be clutch at all in one possession games, that's a dangerous game to play right there.
I kind of posed a question, and I think you guys nailed the answer, and that is the very small marginal stuff I'm talking about can be separated by one guy if he's that damn good in this league. And all four of those teams, after I read this thing today, it took me a little while. I'm slow, but I went through every team and I thought, well, wait a minute. That's not going to be a decline. They may lose a game or two, but the four guys I'm looking at, unless Breeze's, arm has fallen off throughout this pandemic.
Yeah, this is a tough list to fill out, right? I mean, it happens every year in the NFL. That's the beauty of the NFL. That's why we love it so much. There's so much parity in this league year in and year out, right? Teams go from worst to first, but teams also go from first to worst. And it always looks ridiculous when you're predicting a team to go from first to worst, or at least to, like a 13-win team to miss the playoffs the next year. It's like, well, how the hell can you say that? Look how good they were last year. So this is a tough thing to fill out, right? Trying to find playoff teams that you think will take some sort of step back. I mean, Houston seems to be a popular pick for a team that's going to have a bit of a decline this year.
No, people
like, I still think the Texans are going to win the AFC South. I mean, I think you could make a case for Tennessee, who played in the AFC title game last year. I think you could make a case for Indianapolis if Phil Rivers still has something left in the tank. Maybe one of his 14 kids can take over. One of them has to be getting close to NFL age at this point. Like, any of those teams can win the division. But Vegas right now has the Texans over under at 7.5 wins. A team that won 10 games. A team that has one of the best quarterbacks in the entire National Football League.
Where's Indy? Because I think Indy's getting a lot of love. I know I've given him some on this show. I think there's more people at the party, and that's part of it.
Yeah, let me pull that up real quick. Yeah. I mean, I think, Indy's at 8.5.
Okay.
And I think Tennessee's right around there, too. So it's like this division sort of feels up for grabs, right? I don't think any of these teams is unbeatable by any stretch. But, it seems like that's a popular pick across the league, that the Texans take a decent step back. I mean, obviously, 7 wins isn't going to get you into the playoffs. 8 wins might with the expanded postseason. Once again, that starts this year. That could be enough. But if the Texans hit the under this year, then they're not getting in.
It sounds like Vegas, Rod, thinks that the winner of this division is going to be at 9 wins.
Yeah, I think
it's one of those overs at 8.5.
Yeah, I can see it I can see the division cannibalizing each other. That could happen. If I had to pick one team that would, out of these four, that I definitely think is going to take a step back, it wouldn't be New Orleans. If you're looking at coach quarterback combinations, hell, man, Sean Payton, whoever his backup quarterback is, he's probably going to win 50, 60% of his games with that guy, whoever that guy is.
Taysom.
Just like he did when Teddy Bridgewater was the backup. So, no, I don't think New Orleans will be that team. Seattle, I know you guys, and BK always talk trash on Pete Carroll, but, man, Russell Wilson comes to Pete Carroll's rescue all the time, and that wide receiving core is getting better.
Better.
I wouldn't be shocked if they signed Antonio Brown at one point.
Secondary got better.
Secondary getting better. I don't, you know what I mean? That division is the only thing I can see potentially working against Seattle, but that could work against anybody. That could work against the 49ers, work against Arizona, works against L.A. That's just the toughest division in football right now, potentially, in my opinion. And Green Bay, only reason I think they'd fall off is because, and this, maybe they're more likely, in my opinion, is because of Jordan Love and the drama there. I can see Aaron Rodgers just checking out mentally. Straight up saying, man, I want to be traded. And not being being passive
aggressive. So you think the love drama is going to hit even this year? I saw I saw down the road, I definitely think it'll happen in 2 or 3 years. But this year?
Yeah, it's going to hit early on.
Okay.
No doubt about it. There's no question. Because Aaron Rodgers is already hinting at that, that you know, he knows the end is near. If he knows the end is near, he's going to start trying to expedite the process. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So I think that's the only way that could happen. I just got faith in that Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson can win enough games. I mean, winning 11 games last year was a little surprising to me for that group.
I think Green Bay is going to take a huge step back.
I think Green Bay is the one you can pick.
Yeah. Of the four that I, when I look at it, I would pick. Because also watching them last year, got to the end of the year, and I remember thinking, you're 13-3?
Unproven coach, too.
So, yeah.
Unproven
coach. They're the worst 13-3 team ever. They were beating teams by like 3 or 4 points. I mean, you look at San Francisco, you look at Baltimore, you look at Kansas City, like the other teams that were around that record-wise, they're blowing people out every
year. Look at the NFC Championship game.
Exactly. And Green Bay's record was inflated by a bunch of crappy quarterbacks they got to play in the second half because they had an easy schedule because they were so bad 2 years ago. And they got a ton of luck injury-wise as well.
Division sucks though,
and the yeah,
that's the thing that they kind of coast through that division. Bears, the hell are the Bears going to be?
They got
coast
lucky
through
though.
Detroit.
I've been reading the Tribune. Bears apparently.
Now they're going to kill it.
No,
I've trust
is
me.
Is it Trubisky or Foles? Which one? Which one I should be afraid of?
The Tribune says both.
Yeah,
exactly. Ridiculous. Yeah, and then with the Seahawks, I mean, this is an interesting stat. It kind of goes to the point I was making earlier. Like Bill Bornwell is looking at history for a lot of this, right? So. I mean, a lot of these teams played a ton of one-possession games last year. The Texans were 8-3 in one-score games. I think Green Bay was 6-1 in one-score games. Rodby, you mentioned all the second-half comebacks that the Seahawks had. They won 6 games last year when trailing at halftime. Mm-hmm. How about this random number? I mean, this is some deep-dive research right here from Bill Barnwell pulling a Rod Babers on this one.
It was actually his researchers at ESPN.
Yeah, it's probably other people doing this.
Rod does the research.
That's true. Nah, Rod's got a little crack staff.
He's got interns.
Unpaid interns that do all this stuff for him.
I wouldn't call my woman there.
Well done. So how about this? So since the merger, teams that have trailed at halftime more than 4 times and won more than half of those games, right? Collectively, they won 63% of the games when that happened. But the following year, when they trailed at halftime, those same teams won 29% of the games.
Ooh.
So I talk about it in college a lot, too. And I know you brought it up with some teams in the Big 12. Like, one-score games, I mean, you feel better when you have a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers or a Deshaun Watson or a Drew Brees. But, man, that stuff is just so hard to replicate year in and year out. You feel better with a good QB, but yeah, there's a lot of coin toss, wishy-washy stuff, bad breaks, a yard here, a yard there. It just doesn't always happen year to year, so we'll see.
If there is a separator, though, I'll take the quarterback, and that's kind of what I took out of this article.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, we'll see. I still feel like the Saints are the favorites in their division. Seahawks probably
not. Sure about that? Tampa Bay.
I know. It's close. It's close.
Tampa Bay is going to be
I think that's going to be fun this year.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun this year. I think both teams are making the playoffs, and I think Seattle's going to make the playoffs, but they're not going to win the division. And we talked about the Texans, right? Their division's kind of up for grabs. And Green Bay's got a shot because their division's weak, but they still got Minnesota. There's still like some challenging stuff near the top. So
I think I'm picking Tampa Bay in the NFC South.
There you go.
I think I'm picking Tampa Bay.
All right, jump on that. I like that. That's a good pick.
I think I'm picking Tampa Bay.
Why not?
Yeah.
I like that. Okay.
All right, one and done's coming up here, guys. Rod, I'm sorry. It's a Friday, but we're going to talk a little Astros drama here.
Why?
Because
they're not even in the news. Why are you talking to Astros? I'm not even talking about the Astros.
Joe Kelly was on a podcast.
Hey, we call him Joke Kelly around here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joke Kelly. And he had some words for your Astros. And as I'm hearing this, and we're going to play it for you, but as I'm hearing the podcast and I'm hearing him talk, I'm thinking, man, this isn't going anywhere. And we may have a pandemic, but it's going to be back next year. And Bregman may be getting plunked in 3 years from a guy he has no idea why he's getting plunked by. You're getting that audio. He was pissed. Beef coming up next.
I like that five-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one and done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One and done time here with Kevin Dunn. Sorry, I didn't know if we'd actually played the sounder. We were talking about other stuff, and I was like, hey.
Thought I had a little instrumental going.
I'm just letting a little instrumental go, and I've got no problem.
You can always let Pac go. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. It's Pac, too, so I'm thinking there's nothing wrong with doing that at all. All right, welcome to One and Done time here. Rod, this is going to be okay because I want us to have a conversation about this. I'm just going to play some audio like we do on radio. And we're going to have an objective adult conversation like we try to with everything else. So we have an Aggie who started this whole thing. That doesn't shock you, does it?
No, not at all. Aggies like to instigate.
They do.
That's what they do.
And when I say start everything, he just had a podcast and Joe Kelly came on and said some things. But obviously this goes back to Joe Kelly throwing over the head of Alex Bregman when the Dodgers played the Astros. Some of us that aren't Astros fans... and I'm not an Astros hater. If you've been listening to the show the last couple of years, you know I like good baseball. And so there's no hating or loving, but I did start to like them. And I did feel a little hoodwinked because they're a fun team. They take extra bags. They're aggressive. They had really good pitching. They were scouting well. There's all these things that were to like about them. But all in all, I'm just a baseball fan. And I was curious to see what the reaction was going to be like. And then the no fighting thing came down with the pandemic, and I thought, okay, we're going to have to wait till next year. No, we still have some beef, and we still have some words this year. So Kelly, 3-0, if you missed this, throws over the head of Alex Bregman with a two-seamer. You do not headhunt. I never wanted that, and that was too far. Did almost hit Carlos Correa with a slider over his head, and then they go back and forth, and I guess I'll let Joe take it from here. This is the big swing episode. It's Ross Stripling, the Aggie, not former Aggie, always an Aggie, with Joe Kelly.
So from what I know is it goes down like this. Major League Baseball does an investigation, and they want people to snitch. So the only way to snitch, way to get people to rat and be a narc, is by saying, we won't punish the players. We'll give you an immunity to rat people out. And so the people that took the fall for what happened is nonsense. Yes, everyone's involved. But the way that thing was ran over there was not from coaching staff. It was ran with coaching staff, yes, don't get me wrong. But they're not the head boss in charge of that thing. It's the players. So now the players get the immunity, and all they do is go snitch like a little and they don't have to get fined. They don't have to lose games. They take the livelihood from people who worked hard to become a manager and axed. They take the livelihood from people who work hard to become a GM, axed. So what happened is you get people to snitch and become a rat, and the people who could afford to lose money get immunity. The people who afford to get their names tainted get immunity. The people who don't fight, and I'm very passionate about this because I played for a manager. His name's Alex Cora, and this guy lost his job. He's got a daughter, went to school out here. All this goes down. Everything goes down on Alex Cora, which people knew the real story. Would actually hate the players even more. I mean, this guy had to go back to Puerto Rico, where he's from. Daughter's taken out of junior high from American schools because just getting verbally abused. Say, hey, dad's a cheater, da, da, da. So the people that ratted on him, and Alex Cora is a great dude. He's been a great baseball player, great manager, baseball smart. He's got an older brother. He's got a dad. They're all baseball. And now Alex Cora's sitting in Puerto Rico with his family, and I'm sure he still gets. But the problem with that, with me, is that you get immunity and then you rat like a little. That's the problem I have. And I don't think that's right.
Well, Joe, just like his two-seamer, he didn't hold back there, Rod. And so, look, there's some different things I want to get on this. Am I 100% behind Joe Kelly? No. Do I think it brings up some good points in this? Yes. And I'll get to those right now. That the players clearly did not get the punishment that they should have, that they deserved, and that's on Rob Manfred. Mm-hmm. And there's just going to be a lot of retaliation. There's going to be a lot of bitter anger feelings because of that. And so a lot of people thought when they first saw that, well, Joe Kelly's with the Dodgers. He wasn't with the Dodgers in 2017. He was with the Red Sox, and Alex Cora is obviously someone who he really respects. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people respect Alex Cora. I know a lot of people that think highly of him and actually also think highly of assistant coach who was with the Astros, former player.
Beltran,
Carlos Beltran, who had kind of the same thing happen to him. But certainly with Cora, that for Kelly to come out this quickly after the 8-game suspension had been reduced to 5, I think he recorded this when it was still an 8-game suspension. It has been brought back to 5. That he also brought up some good points in the podcast about how Carlos Correa came over to him and was spitting, and he actually gave a little Eddie Haskell. He goes, "Hey, I was doing everything that the CDC advised. I said a couple bad words, but Dusty also said a couple bad words, and they didn't get punished for it." I think all this does is add to the narrative around the league from some red-ass players like Joe Kelly that happened to have 96, 97 in their right arm or left arm, that the Astros don't get hit. Kelly gets 8 games. Dusty Baker doesn't get anything for calling him a skinny little-ass B. And get your back, you know, get your A back on the mound, right?
Yeah, he skinny shamed him,
right?
Oh, being skinny shamed.
Yeah, well, it was the manager, you know, using a cuss word, and Kelly was kind of using that in the podcast, and then Correa went over to them and spit at their dugout. Look, I don't think Joe Kelly is completely innocent. I think he should have.
Correa did spit at their dugout?
Yeah, he did. I mean, so.
Did he really? And they didn't punish him for that?
No, and that's part of what part of what Kelly was talking about. But obviously, we got the real 2 minutes. Kelly's biggest beef has to do with the players didn't get punished, and there were some GMs and some coaches, in this case, a coach that he really respects and likes, and baseball players don't think it's fair. They don't feel like the players got enough punishment, and they're going to take it into their own hands, Rod, and that's not going to change. I mean, that's going to be happening in the next couple years.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite the conundrum. I mean, because I agree with him. It is a shame that they got this blanket, base immunity, essentially, for being able to testify. But Rob Manfred admitted, and I think he's right, he doesn't get any information out of those Astros players unless he gives them immunity. Now, he could have just taken all the facts that he had gathered from the investigation without the Astros necessarily, you know, giving him their testimony, and then just punished them based on that. And I'm sure everybody would have been just fine with that. I don't know how much information they had. Maybe there would be some blowback from the Astros, but you probably wouldn't have gotten the blowback you're getting right now. That's a tough situation. He wanted to know the truth, and to get the truth, he had to give the guys immunity.
Yeah. Right. No, I mean, yeah, he was also in a weird position heading into that. BK was, I mean, you put all this on Manfred, or is this just kind of the situation that he was dealt?
I put a lot of it on Manfred, but, you know, it's a tough situation to deal with, obviously. I mean, it's a lot easier to punish the adults in the room, right? I mean, even if this was a player-led initiative and the players started this and the players perpetuated this, which it sort of feels like that was the case. Coaches could have stopped it, right? I mean, you know, A.J. Hinch knew about it. You know, Jeff Luhnow knew about it. That's why those guys got suspended and ultimately fired. Beltran was a player at the time. But
he was with the Yankees the last year where people were at least questioning him,
right,
correct?
Right. And he lost his job as a manager with the Mets. I think more to do with the Astros stuff, but obviously the Yankees have been linked to stuff like this as well. And then Alex Cora was the bench coach for Houston when they won the World Series in 2017. You know, I can't imagine Alex Cora is immune to all this.
No.
And we talked a little bit before the show, KD, and I definitely want to let you give your thoughts during One and Done. But, you know, it seems fair to me that the coaches and general managers got punished the way that they got punished, right? Because those guys could have done something about this, and they didn't. They definitely knew about it, and they didn't do anything. So I think they should have been punished, I don't know if a lifetime ban, I don't know if anyone's going to touch Alex Cora or Carlos Beltran or A.J. Hinch anymore because of this, but I think those guys should have gotten some punishment, but I also think the players probably should have gotten way more than they got, which is pretty much nothing.
Yeah, and no, I think you're right. And so listening to that, I gave you the first stuff that I agreed with Kelly. I'm sorry, obviously, that Alex Cora's daughter is dealing with that. No daughter needs to deal with that crap, and that can just kids be, you know, being kids, but the kids are probably getting a lot of that from their parents in terms of Cora and what their thoughts on him are. But it doesn't change the fact that Alex Cora was a central figure in all this because he was a bench coach for the Astros, then going to the Red Sox. Alex Cora deserved to be punished, and I've got no problem with that. I mean, you can look at it and say, yeah, the players should have been punished more, but the coaches still needed to be punished the way they were. And that's the way I feel about this. Look, there's just a lot of still resentment and bitter feelings in baseball. And I guess the point of this one and done is that's not going anywhere with the Astros.
And nobody, fans included, and all the players around the league as well, and the managers and coaches, none of them got a chance to exercise those demons, right? And that's why you do have the unwritten rules of baseball where, yeah, we police ourselves, we regulate ourselves, and that's where you get, you know, guys throwing a little smoke at players, and you may get beamed by, you know, a pitch here or there. And that was supposed to be the natural, organic way that the Astros got their punishment since they didn't get enough from Major League Baseball. But then the COVID crisis comes in, and then you have all these restrictions and rules, and now everything's getting politicized. So, it is unfortunate. Joe Kelly's basically just saying, I want to go back to when, you know, they get what they deserved, which was, you know, they get binged a couple of times by a few teams. And I believe right now they're on pace, I don't know, they've been hit like 10 times or something.
They've been hitting their opponents more than they've been getting hit.
That is true.
That's a lack of control. Because they've got a bunch of rookies coming out of their bullpen. I don't think any of that's intentional. But, you know, Rob Manfred lucked out here, gentlemen. Rob Manfred lucked out here because
with COVID, because this was going to be a year where
and I think Rob Manfred was going to have to punish people for retaliating against the Astros. He was going to have to, because otherwise guys would have been doing that every night.
Would have been pinatas.
It would have been ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So the fact that COVID came along and social distancing. Well, we can't have any brawls here. We can't have any of this happen because that's a health and safety violation and guys could die if you do something like this. So I'm really going to be strict on my punishments this year. I think that boded pretty well for Rob Manfred because he would have done this either way. And players across the league would have been pissed off either way because they would have gotten their opportunity, or at least what they felt like was a fair opportunity, to retaliate towards the Astros. Now there's kind of a little bit of a bailout because of the COVID thing. And they really can't do it because you can't brawl, and also the shortened season, the punishments are felt that much more.
And like your theory is they may be hurting the Astros, ironically. They're probably used to
the type
this,
of team that gets fired up
mentality
off, that. Off
that. That would use that as kind of internal motivation, and right now it's throwing them off.
Yeah. Well, I don't know who your
balance of the force.
I don't know who your third baseman is. I don't recognize him anymore.
I don't think anybody does. No swagger at all. Nobody.
Like none.
None.
It's like they hit the off switch.
Yeah. There are a couple of guys right now dealing with that.
Big moment for the Stros, though.
And Altuve is like the homeless person, or just, I shouldn't even say that, but just someone who's maybe on the street who you know they're in a bad situation. You want to go help them out, but they're just talking to themselves. Mm. You're like, are you talking to me? Or I'm coming over here to like to see if you're all right, man. Yeah. You can see him.
When he's slamming his bat
into the ground.
You
can see the wheels moving, and I'm like, oh, God, I would love to help you, but I can't because I still love Altuve, man.
I do too, but it ain't looking good.
It turns tonight. It turns around tonight.
The revenge tour?
Yeah. Yordan Alvarez called up to Houston.
Good news.
And I haven't seen the lineup just yet. I think Dusty Baker has hinted towards Alvarez and Brantley not being able to play the outfield yet. They're going up against a lefty tonight, so I'm curious what that lineup looks like. But
Alvarez is coming up to pitch. Y'all didn't read that?
They might need him to pitch.
They may.
I wouldn't be surprised.
See, normally I'd think that's a joke, but this year I'm not sure if it is a joke with what the Astros are bringing out. So we'll see. Good stuff, though, KD. One and done. Joe Kelly.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Giving his thoughts, and I feel like a lot of people probably share a similar sense.
It is. I love beefs, man.
But now you're right. It's going to continue. Yeah. Now it just gets prolonged to next year. Because you just, all this stuff is building up now from this season.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good.
Who's Jimmy Butler's beef with?
TJ Warren.
TJ Warren. Yeah, it's TJ Warren, who was red hot. And like, I'm sorry, when that stuff's in play, there's a better chance I'm going to tune in earlier.
First round playoff series.
Yes, sir.
Eight Pacers.
Four
and
five.
And they play today. Regular season finale. How weird is that? All right, good stuff. There is one and done here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We've got Off the Record coming up here on a Friday. Oh, man, you work your whole life to get to the NFL. You get your opportunity in the league, and then you just throw it all away. A sad story for a former Big 12 cornerback. Up next.
D.D. Mega doo-doo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my head comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! And thing sucks!
Oh, Friday's always a great day. But this Friday just got a little bit better, gentlemen. Especially if you're a Texas football fan. We've got some breaking news. According to a website known as Twitter.com, the Texas Longhorns have just picked up a massive commitment for the class of 2022. So not this coming class, but a year from now. This is the number one player in the country for the class of 2022. The number one quarterback in the country for the class of 2022. A young man by the name of Quinn Ewers, a five-star out of South Lake Carroll High School near the Metroplex. He just posted on Twitter that he has committed to the University of Texas. Gentlemen, I've been texting Jeff Howe. You hear him on Light the Tower every weekday from 10 to noon, also with Horns 24/7, also the Longhorn Blitz podcast. With Rod B. and Matt Butler.
Shout out.
Jeff Howe texted me that this is the biggest prospect to commit to Texas since Vince Young.
Whoa.
You guys heard of that guy, Vince Young?
Vincent Young. Madison?
As he was known in high school.
I wanted Reggie McNeil. Actually, no, I didn't. And I'm kidding with that. I, at the time,
that was funny.
Said I wanted Vince.
That was good.
Closest comps that we're seeing for Quinn Ewers in terms of arm talent, he's getting Trevor Lawrence comps. He's getting Matt Stafford comps, who was also the number one player in the country coming out of Highland Park.
I'm getting Phillip Rivers comps, too.
In the Metroplex area. You're getting Phillip Rivers comps?
Yep.
We'll take that
in
as
terms
well.
Of sneaky good velocity, allows him to drive the ball.
This is like bigger than Garrett Gilbert, guys. I mean, that's probably the last time we got this excited about a quarterback recruit committing to the University of Texas. This is bigger than that. So we're actually going to speak with Mike Roach of Horns 24/7 at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. He's been all over this recruitment, and he's spoken with Quinn a couple of times over the course of this recruitment. But huge news for Texas Longhorn football. Quinn Ewers committing to the University of Texas, the number one quarterback, and in some sites, the number one player in the country for the class of 2022. It's a beautiful thing, gentlemen.
It's big time.
Yeah, good news. And
it's great news.
And who knows individually how good of a college football player he'll be, even though he is a 7-star and 1-1 in 2022, if you look at projections right now. But you mentioned Garrett Gilbert. We've had this before with Texas. But, Rod, I guess the good news for me is that it's a little bit of a sign that Texas – recruiting is in a good spot right now, and they're gathering momentum, which is a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, we'll talk to Mike Roach more about it, but it's a huge move, and it's one of those things. I think Tom Herman has just been doing a great job of stockpiling talent at positions that were bereft of talented depth when he first got here 4 years ago. I mean, quarterback, running back, and now those are two of the deepest positions for any college football program in the country, let alone one of the deepest that we've seen here in recent memory. So we'll talk more about that on the other side. I might even scrap Roach Rant of the day and just talk about
that
commitment too. I mean, if it's as big as everybody's saying it is, we might need to devote some more time to it.
Also a big get for Mike Yersich, who was the recruiter on this, going up against Lincoln Riley, Chad Morris, Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah. It's nice, big time. In that this is the 2022 class,
yes,
correct?
Yes, sir.
Is there another quarterback in the 2022 class? Texas? Or is this the first, obviously?
No, I think Texas only has one other commitment for the class of 2022, not a quarterback.
Cade Klubnik's in 2022, but I don't care. I mean, whichever one's better.
Usually Tom Herman, he recruits two quarterbacks every other year. That's been his MO so far, and I like that idea. You can never have too many quarterbacks, and he got two in the 2021 class, mm-hmm. so he'll probably just get one in 22 and then two in 23.
Yeah, Faison Wilson, the receiver from Lancaster.
I like that name.
Also the Faison. Metroplex. Yeah, he's a four-star guy. He's the other commit that Texas has for 2022. But we'll talk to Mike Roach about this. But
I like that.
This is one of those domino type of kids.
Well done.
I'm not talking about a summer job. I'm saying you get his commitment and other commitments generally follow.
Not messing around with the hair either. We'll get to all that.
All right. Well, this is a story that broke yesterday, but it was pretty cool. The Seahawks cut rookie cornerback Kima Sivirand after he was caught on video reportedly trying to sneak a young lady into the team hotel. This comes from Tom Pelissero. He also reports that the woman was disguised in Seahawks gear to try to make her look or pass off as one of the players. I mean, how big was this young lady?
I was going to say.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe she could be a DB.
Sounds like someone I'm into. I mean, even then, to be a DB or a wideout, you got to be, like 80 plus.
She could say it was Quandre. Quandre's pretty short.
Yeah.
Quandre.
This is Quandre. All right, yeah, it's all good. Hey, Quandre, come here, man. Yeah, hey, Q, what's up?
Guys, he learned this from Mike Gundy.
That's great.
He's an Oklahoma State kid.
He is.
Oh, I don't remember him at Oklahoma State.
I didn't really
State
remember
either.
Him that much either.
Interesting.
It's an amazing story, man.
Great story.
This guy works his entire life to get to the NFL. He gets an opportunity finally with the Seattle Seahawks, and he just throws it all away. It really is undefeated, though. We talk about it all the time, it being undefeated. This is another example of that. It is undefeated.
There's a song about it right now. It's called WAP.
Yes.
By Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion.
Ah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all about how undefeated it is.
Thought about using that as a rejoin. But then again, I thought for a second, I was like, I like this job a little bit.
I love the videos of old people watching that WAP video and how distraught they are when they watch it. But
this is more of a dry county with those intros.
No, BK's right, man. What are you talking about? You've seen Casino before, right?
I have.
The Casino is based on a true story of it. Was it Lucky? Is it Lefty Rosenthal?
Lucky Lefty.
That's the real name of it. I think Sam Rothstein is the guy's name in the movie. But essentially, Vegas, part of the reason Vegas loses their grip on, the mob loses grip on Vegas is because of it. With a woman. That's why he was distracted a lot of the time because he had fell in love with one that you're not supposed to turn into a housewife.
Mm.
And did. Well, he tried anyway. Didn't work out.
Can't do it. Dr. Dre told us that a long time ago.
Can't do it, man. Mm. Cleopatra, Helen of Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Brought down nations, dog.
Underrated Dre song. Nations. Underrated Dre song.
Which one?
Housewife.
Yeah. I love that one.
The Aftermath, 2001.
Like top five for me.
Damn.
For Dre song. For Dre.
A great one.
Oh, for Dre song.
For Dre.
Okay.
Man. All right, so.
For Dre is the lyricist.
Man. That's a phenomenal story.
See,
right
this
there.
Is why, guys, this is why the virtual bubble, we talk about it. We're joking about it now, obviously. This is why it's tough. And this is why one of the baseball writers said, I think horny dudes may bring down Major League Baseball this season. Because all it takes is one dude who falls for a thirst trap.
Yep.
And then he wants it really, really bad. And we've all been there, so I get it.
Yep.
I'm not judging.
Mm-hmm.
And then he decides it's worth it. It's worth risking the entire season for
everything.
The entire league just so I can get some right now. And we've all done it. We've all risked way too much.
Not just one night.
To get some. Every man who's listening to this show is, man, I've risked a whole lot just to get some. And you're ashamed of how much you risk. Mm-hmm. Probably put a risk going to jail. Probably get a risk getting killed. Probably get a risk anything. But you wanted it bad.
I don't regret the ones where it actually went through, too. But there have been a lot of nights where you risk it and you get nothing.
And you get nothing. Like this young man.
And you still
risked it all. He got nothing.
Got nothing.
Oh.
Nothing.
He got nothing?
He got
Well, she didn't even make it in the place. I'm hoping Sheely's made it in, and then they found out the next day. So at least if he's going out, he's going out with a bang.
All right.
Let's end on that.
Let's end it on that note right there.
What are y'all clapping for?
Costanza style.
What did I do?
You did it.
I don't know what happened. All right. The breaking news. Texas landing a commitment from the number one player in the country for the class of 2022. We're going to speak with Mike Roach of Horns 247 to discuss what it means up next.